I like your sister. One of the few. Amryn lifted her eyes to me as if I'd said the words aloud. I like her because so few do. I like her because she is not easy to be around or to understand. But nothing, Amryn said, returning to the puzzle. Because I like her, I am not inclined to gossip about her current state. It's not gossip, I'm concerned. We all were. She is starting down a path that I will not betray her confidence. She's talked to you? Too many emotions cascaded through me at that. Relief that Nesta had talked to anyone, confusion that it had been Amryn, and perhaps even some jealousy that my sister had not turned to me, or Elaine. No, Amryn said. But I know she would not like me to be musing over her path with anyone. With you. But give her time, give her space, give her the opportunity to sort through this on her own. It's been months. She's an immortal. Months are inconsequential. I clenched my jaw. She refuses to come home for solstice. Elaine will be heartbroken if she doesn't. Elaine or you? Those silver eyes pinned me to the spot. Both, I said through my teeth. Again, Amryn sifted through her pieces. Elaine has her own problems to focus on. Such as? Amryn just gave me a look. I ignored it. If Nesta deigns to visit you, I said, the ancient chair groaning as I pushed it back and rose, grabbing my coat and scarf from the bench by the door. Tell her that it would mean a great deal if she came on solstice. Amryn didn't bother to look up from her puzzle. I will make no such promises, girl. It was the best I could hope for. Chapter 16. Rhysand. That afternoon, Cassian dumped his leather bag on the narrow bed against the wall of the fourth bedroom in the townhouse, the contents rattling. You brought weapons to solstice? I asked, leaning against the doorframe. Asriel, setting his own bag on the bed opposite Cassian's, threw our brother a vague look of alarm. After passing out on the sitting room couches last night, and a likely uncomfortable sleep, they'd finally bothered to settle into the bedroom designated for them. Cassian shrugged, plopping onto the bed, which was better suited for a child than an Illyrian warrior.
Some might be gifts.
And the rest? Cassian towed off his boots and leaned against the headboard, folding his arms behind his head as his wings draped to the floor.
The females bring their jewelry, I bring my weapons.
I know a few females in this house who might take offense to that. Cassian offered me a wicked grin in response, the same grin he'd given Devlin and the commanders at our meeting an hour ago. All was ready for the storm, all patrols accounted for. A standard meeting, and one I didn't need to attend, but it was always good to remind them of my presence, especially before they all gathered for solstice. Asriel strode to the lone window at the end of the room and peered into the garden below. I've never stayed in this room. His midnight voice filled the space.
That's because you and I have been shoved to the bottom of the ladder, brother, Cassian answered, his wings draping over the bed into the wooden floor. Moore gets the good bedroom. Elaine is living in the other, and so we get this one.
He didn't mention that the final empty bedroom, Nesta's old room, would remain open. Asriel, to his credit, didn't either. Better than the attic, I offered.
Poor Lucian, Cassian said, smiling.
If Lucian shows up, I corrected. No word about whether he would be joining us, or remaining in that mausoleum Tamlin called a home.
My money's on yes, Cassian said. Want to make a wager?
No, Asriel said, not turning from the window. Cassian sat up, the portrait of outrage.
No?
Asriel tucked in his wings.
Would you want people betting on you? You assholes bet on me all the time. I remember the last one you did, you and Moore, making wagers about whether my wings would heal.
I snorted. True. Asriel remained by the window. Will Nesta stay here if she comes? Cassian suddenly found the siphon atop his left hand to be in need of polishing. I decided to spare him and said to Asriel, "Our meeting with the commanders went as well as could be expected. Devlin actually had a schedule drawn up for the girls' training. Whenever this oncoming storm blows out, I don't think it was for show."
"I'd still be surprised if they remember once the storm clears," Asriel said, turning from the garden window at last. Cassian grunted in agreement.
"Anything new about the grumbling in the camps?"
I kept my face neutral.
As and I had agreed to wait until after the holiday to divulge to Cassian the full extent of what we knew, who we suspected or knew was behind it. We told him the basics, though, enough to assuage any sort of guilt. But I knew Cassian as well as myself, perhaps more so. He wouldn't be able to leave it alone if he knew now. And after all he'd been putting up with these months, and long before it, my brother deserved a break, at least for a few days. Of course, that break had already included the meeting with Devlin and a grueling training session atop the House of Wind this morning. Out of all of us, the concept of relaxing was the most foreign to Cassian. Asriel leaned against the carved wood footboard at the end of his bed.
"Little to add to what you already know."
"Smooth, easy, liar. Far better than me."
"But they sensed that it's growing. The best time to assess is after solstice, when they've all returned home. See who spreads the discord then. If it's grown while they were all celebrating together, or snowed in with this storm."
The perfect way to then reveal the full extent of what we knew. If the Illyrians revolted... I didn't want to think that far down the road. What it would cost me. What it would cost Cassian to fight the people he still so desperately wanted to be a part of. To kill them. It'd be far different from what we'd done to the Illyrians who'd gladly served Amarantha and done such terrible things in her name. Far different. I shut out the thought. Later, after solstice, we'd deal with it then. Cassian, mercifully, seemed inclined to do the same. Not that I blamed him. Given the hour of bullshit posturing he'd endured before we'd winnowed here. Even now, centuries later, the camp lords and commanders still challenged him, spat on him. Cassian towed his own footboard, his legs not even fully stretched out. "Who used this bed, anyway? It's Amren-sized."
I snorted.
"Careful how you whine. Feyre calls us Illyrian babies often enough." Asriel chuckled. "Her flying has improved enough that I think she's entitled to do so." Pride rippled through me. Perhaps she wasn't a natural, but she made up for it with sheer grit and focus. I'd lost count of the hours we spent in the air, the precious time we'd managed to steal for ourselves. I said to Cassian, "I can see about finding you two longer beds. With Solstice Eve here, it would take a minor miracle. I'd have to turn Valaris upside down." He waved a hand. "No need. Better than the couch." "You being too drunk to climb the stairs last night aside," I said wryly, earning a vulgar gesture in response. "Space in this house does indeed seem to be an issue. You could stay up at the house, if you'd prefer. I can winnow you in."
"The house is boring,"
Cassian yawned for emphasis.
"Az sneaks off into shadows, and I'm left all alone."
Asriel gave me a look that said, "Illyrian baby, indeed." I hid my smile and said to Cassian, "Perhaps you should get a place of your own, then."
"I have one, in Illyria."
"I meant here." Cassian lifted a brow.
"I don't need a house here. I need a room."
He again towed the footboard, rocking the wood panel.
"This one would be fine, if it didn't have a doll's bed."
I chuckled again but held my retort. My suggestion that he might want a place of his own. Soon. Not that anything was happening on that front. Not any time soon. Nesta had made it clear enough that she had no interest in Cassian. Not even in being in the same room as him. I knew why. I'd seen it happen, had felt that way plenty.
"Perhaps that will be your solstice present, Cassian," I replied instead.
"A new bed here."
"Better than Moore's presents," Az muttered.
Cassian laughed, the sound booming off the walls, but I peered in the direction of the Sidra and lifted a brow. She looked radiant. Solstice Eve had fully settled upon Valaris, quieting the thrum that had pulsed through the city for the past few weeks, as if everyone paused to listen to the falling snow. A gentle fall, no doubt, compared with the wild storm unleashing itself upon the Illyrian mountains. We'd gathered in the sitting room, the fire crackling, wine opened and flowing. Though neither Lucian nor Nesta had shown their faces, the mood was far from somber. Indeed, as Feyre emerged from the kitchen hallway, I took a moment to simply drink her in from where I sat in the armchair near the fire. She went right to Moore, perhaps because Moore was holding the wine, the bottle already outreached. I admired the view from behind as Feyre's glass was filled. It was an effort to leash every raging instinct at that particular view, at the curves and hollows of my mate, the color of her, so vibrant, even in this room of so many personalities. Her midnight blue velvet gown hugged her perfectly, leaving little to the imagination before it pooled to the floor. She'd left her hair down, curling slightly at the ends. Hair I knew I later wanted to plunge my hands into, scattering the silver combs pinning up the sides, and then I'd peel off that dress, slowly. "You'll make me vomit," Amryn hissed, kicking me with her silver silk shoe from where she sat in the armchair adjacent to mine. "Rein in that scent of yours, boy." I cut her an incredulous look. "Apologies." I threw a glance to Varian, standing to the side of her armchair, and silently offered him my condolences. Varian, clad in summer court blue and gold, only grinned and inclined his head toward me. "Strange. So strange to see the Prince of Adriata here, in my townhouse, smiling, drinking my liquor. Until..."
"Do you even celebrate Solstice in the summer court?"
"Until Cassian decided to open his mouth." Varian turned his head toward where Cassian and Asriel lounged on the sofa, his silver hair sparkling in the firelight. "In the summer, obviously, as there are two solstices." Asriel hid his smile by taking a sip of his wine. Cassian slung an arm across the back of the sofa.
"Are there really?"
"Mother above, it was going to be this sort of night then."
"Don't bother answering him," Amryn said to Varian, sipping from her own wine. "Cassian is precisely as stupid as he looks and sounds," she added with a slashing glance.
Cassian lifted his glass in salute before drinking. "I suppose your summer solstice is the same in theory as ours," I said to Varian, though I knew the answer. I'd seen many of them long ago. "Families gather, food is eaten, presents shared." Varian gave me what I could have sworn was a grateful nod.
"Indeed."
Feyre appeared beside my seat, her scent settling into me. I tugged her down to perch on the rolled arm of my chair. She did so with a familiarity that warmed something deep in me, not even bothering to look my way before her arm slid around my shoulders, just resting there, just because she could. Mate. My mate.
"So, Tarquin doesn't celebrate winter solstice at all?" she asked Varian.
A shake of the head.
"Perhaps we should have invited him," Feyre mused.
"There's still time," I offered. "The cauldron knew we needed alliances more than ever."
"The call is yours, Prince."
Varian peered down at Amryn, who seemed to be entirely focused on her goblet of wine.
"I'll think about it."
I nodded. Tarquin was his High Lord. Should he come here, Varian's focus would be elsewhere, away from where he wished that focus to be, for the few days he had with Amryn. Moore plopped onto the sofa between Cassian and Asriel, her golden curls bouncing.
"I like it to be just us anyway," she declared. "And you, Varian," she amended.
Varian offered her a smile that said he appreciated the effort. The clock on the mantel chimed 8. As if it had summoned her, Elaine slid into the room. Moore was instantly on her feet, offering, insisting on wine. Typical. Elaine politely refused, taking up a spot in one of the wooden chairs set in the bay of windows,
also typical. But Feyre was staring at the clock, her brow furrowed.
Nesta isn't coming.
You invited her for tomorrow. I sent a soothing caress down the bond, as if it could wipe away the disappointment rippling from her. Feyre's hand tightened on my shoulder. I lifted my glass, the room quieting. To family, old and new, let the solstice festivities begin. We all drank to that.
Chapter 17. Feyre. The glare of sunlight on snow filtering through our heavy velvet curtains awoke me on solstice morning. I scowled at the sliver of brightness and turned my head away from the window, but my cheek collided with something crinkly and firm. Definitely not my pillow. Peeling my tongue from the roof of my mouth, rubbing at the headache that had formed by my left brow thanks to the hours of drinking, laughing, and more drinking that we'd done until the early hours of the morning, I lifted myself enough to see what had been set beside my face. A present. Wrapped in black crepe paper and tied with silver thread. And beside it, smiling down at me, was Rhys. He propped his head on a fist, his wings draped across the bed behind him.
Happy birthday, Feyre, darling.
I groaned. How are you smiling after all that wine?
I didn't have a whole bottle to myself. That's how.
He traced a finger down the groove of my spine. I rose onto my elbows, surveying the present he'd laid out. It was rectangular and almost flat, only an inch or two thick.
I was hoping you'd forget.
Rhys smirked.
Of course you were.
Yawning, I dragged myself into a kneeling position, stretching my arms high above my head before I pulled the gift to me. I thought we were opening presents tonight with the others.
It's your birthday,
he drawled.
The rules don't apply to you.
I rolled my eyes at that, even as I smiled a bit. Easing away the wrapping, I pulled out a stunning notebook bound in black, supple leather so soft it was almost like velvet. On the front, stamped in simple silver letters, were my initials. Opening the floppy front cover, it revealed page after page of beautiful, thick paper. All blank.
A sketchbook, he said. Just for you.
It's beautiful.
It was.
Simple, yet exquisitely made. I would have picked it for myself had such a luxury not seemed excessive. I leaned down to kiss him, a brush of our mouths. From the corner of my eye, I saw another item appear on my pillow. I pulled back to see a second present waiting, the large box wrapped in amethyst paper. More? Rhys waved a lazy hand, pure Illyrian arrogance.
Did you think a sketchbook would suffice for my high lady?
My face heating, I opened the second present. A sky blue scarf of softest wool lay folded inside.
So you can stop stealing Moors, he said, winking.
I grinned, wrapping the scarf around myself. Every inch of skin it touched felt like a decadence. Thank you, I said, stroking the fine material. The color is beautiful. Another wave of his hand and a third present appeared.
This is getting excessive.
Rhys only arched a brow, and I chuckled as I opened the third gift. A new satchel for my painting supplies, I breathed, running my hands over the fine leather as I admired all the various pockets and straps. A set of pencils and charcoals already lay within. The front had also been monogrammed with my initials, along with a tiny knight court insignia. Thank you, I said again. Rhysand's smile deepened.
I had a feeling jewels wouldn't be high on your list of desired gifts.
It was true. Beautiful as they were, I had little interest in them, and had plenty already. This is exactly what I would have asked for.
Had you not been hoping that your own mate would forget your birthday?
I snorted. Had I not been hoping for that? I kissed him again, and when I made to pull away, he slid a hand behind my head and kept me there. He kissed me deeply, lazily,
as if he'd be contented to do nothing but that all day. I might have considered it, but I managed to extract myself and crossed my legs as I settled back on the bed and reached for my new sketchbook and satchel of supplies. "I want to draw you," I said, "as my birthday present to me." His smile was positively feline. I added, flipping open my sketchbook and turning to the first page, "You said once that nude would be best." Reese's eyes glowed, and a whisper of his power through the room had the curtains parting, flooding the space with mid-morning sunshine, showing every glorious naked inch of him sprawled across the bed, illuminating the faint reds and golds of his wings. "Do your worst, curse breaker." My very blood sparking, I pulled out a piece of charcoal and began. It was nearly 11 by the time we emerged from our room. I'd filled pages and pages of my sketchbook with him, drawings of his wings, his eyes, his Illyrian tattoos, and enough of his naked, beautiful body that I knew I'd never shared this sketchbook with anyone but him. Reese had indeed hummed his approval when he'd leafed through my work, smirking at the accuracy of my drawings regarding certain areas of his body. The townhouse was still silent as we descended the stairs, my mate opting for Illyrian leathers, for whatever strange reason. If solstice morning included one of Cassian's grueling training sessions, I'd gladly stay behind and start eating the feast I could already smell cooking in the kitchen down the hall. Entering the dining room to find breakfast waiting, but none of our companions present, Reese helped me into my usual seat midway down the table, then slid into the chair beside me. "I'm assuming Moore's still asleep upstairs." I plopped a chocolate pastry onto my plate, then another onto his. Reese sliced into the leek and ham quiche and set a chunk on my plate.
"She drank even more than you, so I'm guessing we won't see her until sundown."
I snorted and held out my cup to receive the tea he now offered, steam curling from the pot spout. But two massive figures filled the archway of the dining room, and Reese paused. Asriel and Cassian, having crept up on cat-soft feet, were also wearing their Illyrian leathers. And from their shit-eating grins, I knew this would not end well. They moved before Reese could, and only a flare of his power kept the teapot from falling onto the table before they hauled him out of his seat and aimed right for the front door. I only bit into my pastry. "Please bring him back in one piece."
"We'll take good care of him,"
Cassian promised, wicked humor in his eyes. Even Asriel was still grinning as he said,
"If he can keep up."
I lifted a brow, and just as they vanished out the front door, still dragging Reese along, my mate said to me,
"Tradition,"
as if that was an explanation, and then they were gone, off to the mother knew where. But at least neither of the Illyrians had remembered my birthday. Thank the cauldron. So with Moore asleep, and Elaine likely in the kitchen helping to prepare that delicious food whose aroma now filled the house, I indulged in a rare, quiet meal. Helped myself to the pastry I'd put on Reese's plate, along with his portion of the quiche. And another after that. Tradition, indeed. With little to do beyond resting until the festivities began the hour before sundown, I settled in at the desk in our bedroom to do some paperwork.
"Very festive,"
Reese purred down the bond. I could practically see his smirk. "And where exactly are you?"
"Don't worry about it."
I scowled at the eye on my palm, though I knew Reese no longer used it. "That makes it sound like I should be worried." A dark laugh.
"Cassian says you can pummel him when we get home."
"Which will be when?" A too long pause.
"Before dinner?"
I chuckled. "I really don't want to know, do I?"
"You really don't."
Still smiling, I let the thread between us drop and sighed at the papers staring up at me. Bills and letters and budgets. I lifted a brow at the last, hauling a leather-bound tome toward me. A list of household expenses, just for Reese and me. A drop of water compared with the wealth contained across his various assets. Our assets. Pulling out a piece of paper, I began counting the expenses so far, working through a tangle of mathematics. The money was there, if I wanted to use it, to buy that studio. There was money in the miscellaneous purchases funds to do it. Yes, I could buy that studio in a heartbeat with the fortune now in my name. But using that money so lavishly, even for a studio that wouldn't be just for me? I shut the ledger, sliding my calculations into the pages, and rose. Paperwork could wait. Decisions like that could wait. Solstice, Reese had told me, was for family, and since he was currently spending it with his brothers, I supposed I should find at least one of my sisters. Elaine met me halfway to the kitchen, bearing a tray of jam tarts toward the table in the dining room, where an assortment of baked goods had already begun to take form. Tiered cakes and iced cookies, sugar-frosted buns and caramel-drizzled fruit pies. "Those look pretty," I told her by way of greeting, nodding toward the heart-shaped cookies on her tray. All of it looked pretty. Elaine smiled, her braid swishing with each step toward the growing mound of food. "They taste as good as they look." She set down the tray and wiped her flour-coated hands on the apron she wore over her dusty pink gown. Even in the middle of winter, she was a bloom of color and sunshine. She handed me one of the tarts, sugar sparkling. I bit in without hesitation and let out a hum of pleasure. Elaine beamed. I surveyed the food she was assembling and asked between bites, "How long have you been working on this?" A one-shouldered shrug. "Since dawn," she added. "Nuala and Caradwyn were up hours earlier." I'd seen the solstice bonus Reese had given each of them. It was more than most families made in a year. They deserved every damned copper mark, especially for what they'd done for my sister. The companionship, the purpose, the small sense of normalcy in that kitchen. She'd bought them those cozy fuzzy blankets from the weaver, one raspberry pink and the other lilac. Elaine surveyed me in turn as I finished off the tart and reached for another. "Have you had any word from her?" I knew who she meant. Just as I opened my mouth to tell her no, a knock thudded on the front door. Elaine moved fast enough that I could barely keep up, flinging open the fogged glass antechamber door in the foyer, then unlatching the heavy oak front door. But it wasn't Nesta, who stood on the front step, cheeks flushed with cold. No. As Elaine took a step back, hand falling away from the doorknob, she revealed Lucian, smiling tightly at us both. "Happy solstice," was all he said. Chapter 18. Feyre. "You look well," I said to Lucian when we'd settled in the armchairs before the fire, Elaine perched silently on the couch nearby. Lucian warmed his hands in the glow of the birch fire, the light casting his face in reds and golds, golds that matched his mechanical eye. "You as well." A sidelong glance toward Elaine, swift and fleeting. "Both of you." Elaine said nothing, but at least she bowed her head in thanks. In the dining room, Nuala and Caradwyn continued to add food to the table, their presence now little more than twin shadows as they walked through the walls. "You brought presents," I said uselessly, nodding toward the small stack he'd set by the window.
"It's solstice tradition here, isn't it?"
I stifled my wince. The last solstice I'd experienced had been at the Spring Court, with Ianthe and Tamlin. "You're welcome to stay for the night," I said, since Elaine certainly wasn't going to. Lucian lowered his hands into his lap and leaned back in the armchair.
"Thank you, but I have other plans."
I prayed he didn't catch the slightly relieved glimmer on Elaine's face. "Where are you going?" I asked instead, hoping to keep his focus on me, knowing it was an impossible task. Lucian fumbled for the words, not out of some lie or excuse, I realized a moment later. Realized when he said, "I've been at the Spring Court every now and then, but if I'm not here in Valaris, I've mostly been staying with Jurian and Vasa." I straightened.
Really? Where?
There's an old manor house in the southeast, in the humans' territory. Jurian and Vasa were gifted it.
From the lines that bracketed his mouth, I knew who had likely arranged for the manor to fall into their hands. Grayson. Or his father. I didn't dare glance at Elaine.
Rhys mentioned that they were still in Prithian. I didn't realize it was such a permanent base.
A short nod.
For now.
While things are sorted out.
Like the world without a wall. Like the four human queens who still squatted across the continent. But now wasn't the time to talk of it.
How are they?
Jurian and Vasa.
I'd learned enough from Rhys about how Tamlin was faring. I didn't care to hear any more of it.
Jurian?
Lucian blew out a breath, scanning the carved wood ceiling above.
Thank the cauldron for him. I never thought I'd say that, but it's true.
He ran a hand through his silken red hair.
He's keeping everything running. I think he'd have been crowned king by now if it wasn't for Vasa.
A twitch of the lips, a spark in that russet eye.
She's doing well enough, savoring every second of her temporary freedom.
I had not forgotten her plea to me that night after the last battle with Hybern, to break the curse that kept her human by night, firebird by day. A once proud queen, still proud, yes, but desperate to reclaim her freedom, her human body, her kingdom. She and Jurian are getting along. I hadn't seen them interact, could only imagine what the two of them would be like in the same room together, both trying to lead the humans who occupied the sliver of land at the southernmost end of Prithian, left ungoverned for so long. Too long. No king or queen remained in these lands, no memory of their name, their lineage, at least amongst the humans. The Fae might know. Rhys might know. But all that lingered of whoever had once ruled the southern tip of Prithian was a motley assortment of lords and ladies. Nothing else. No dukes or earls or any of the titles I'd once heard my sisters mention while discussing the humans on the continent. There were no such titles in the Fae lands. Not in Prithian. No. There were just high lords and lords. And now a high lady. I wondered if the humans had taken to using only lord as a title thanks to the high Fae who lurked above the wall. Lurked, but no longer. Lucian considered my question.
Vasa and Jurian are two sides of the same coin. Mercifully, their vision for the future of the human territories is mostly aligned. But the methods on how to attain that...
A frown to Elaine, then a wince at me.
This isn't very solstice-like talk.
Definitely not, but I didn't mind. And as for Elaine, my sister rose to her feet. I should get refreshments.
Lucian rose as well. No need to trouble yourself, I'm...
But she was already out of the room. When her footsteps had faded from earshot, Lucian slumped into his armchair and blew out a long breath.
How is she?
Better. She makes no mention of her abilities, if they remain.
Good. But is she still...
A muscle flickered in his jaw.
Does she still mourn him?
The words were little more than a growl. I chewed on my lip, weighing how much of the truth to reveal. In the end, I opted for all of it.
She was deeply in love with him, Lucian.
His russet eye flashed with simmering rage, an uncontrollable instinct for a mate to eliminate any threat. But he remained sitting, even as his fingers dug into the arms of his chair. I continued. It's only been a few months. Grayson made it clear that the engagement is ended, but it might take her a while longer to move past it. Again, that rage. Not from jealousy or any threat, but...
He's as fine a prick as any I've ever encountered.
Lucian had encountered him, I realized. Somehow, in living with Jurian and Vasa at that manor, he'd run into Elaine's former betrothed and managed to leave the human lord breathing.
I would agree with you on that, I admitted. But remember, they were engaged. Give her time to accept it. To accept a life shackled to me.
My nostrils flared. That's not what I meant.
She wants nothing to do with me.
Would you?
if your positions were reversed?
He didn't answer.
I tried.
After solstice wraps up, why don't you come to stay for a week or two?
Not in your apartment, I mean, here at the townhouse.
And do what?
Spend time with her.
I don't think she'll tolerate 2 minutes alone with me, so forget about 2 weeks.
His jaw worked as he studied the fire. Fire. His mother's gift. Not his father's.
Yes, it was Baron's gift. The gift of the father who the world believed had sired him, but not the gift of Helion, his true father. I still hadn't mentioned it to anyone other than Rhys. Now wasn't the time for that either.
I'd hoped, I ventured to say, that when you rented the apartment, it meant you would come work here. With us. Be our human emissary.
Am I not doing that now?
He arched a brow.
Am I not sending twice-weekly reports to your spymaster?
You could come live here, is all I'm saying, I pushed. Truly live here. Stay in Valaris for longer than a few days at a time.
We could get you nicer quarters.
Lucian got to his feet.
I don't need your charity.
I rose as well.
But Jurien and Vasses is fine?
You'd be surprised to see how the three of us get along. Friends, I realized. They had somehow become his friends.
So you'd rather stay with them? I'm not staying with them. The manor is ours.
Interesting. His golden eye whirred.
What is?
Not feeling very festive at all, I said sharply.
That you now feel more comfortable with humans than with the High Fae. If you ask me, I'm not. It seems like you've decided to fall in with two people without homes of their own as well.
Lucian stared at me long and hard. When he spoke, his voice was rough.
Happy solstice to you, Farah.
He turned toward the foyer, but I grabbed his arm to halt him. The corded muscle of his forearm shifted beneath the fine silk of his sapphire jacket, but he made no move to shake me off.
I didn't mean that, I said. You have a home here, if you want it.
Lucian studied the sitting room, the foyer beyond, and the dining room on its other side.
The Band of Exiles.
The what?
That's what we call ourselves, the Band of Exiles.
You have a name for yourselves?
I fought my incredulous tone.
He nodded.
Jurien isn't an exile, I said. Vasa, yes. Lucian, 2 times over now.
Jurien's kingdom is nothing but dust and half-forgotten memory, his people long scattered and absorbed into other territories. He can call himself whatever he likes.
Yes, after the battle with Highburn, after Jurien's aid, I supposed he could.
But I asked, and what exactly does this Band of Exiles plan to do? Host events? Organize party planning committees?
Lucian's metal eye clicked faintly and narrowed. You can be as much of an asshole as that maid of yours. You know that?
True. I sighed again.
I'm sorry, I don't have anywhere else to go.
Before I could object, he said,
You ruined any chance I have of going back to Spring. Not to Tamlin, but to the court beyond his house. Everyone either still believes the lies you spun, or they believe me complicit in your deceit. And as for here...
He shook off my grip and headed for the door.
I can't stand to be in the same room as her for more than 2 minutes. I can't stand to be in this court and have your mate pay for the very clothes on my back.
I studied the jacket he wore. I'd seen it before, back in...
Tamlin sent it to our manor yesterday.
Lucian hissed.
My clothes, my belongings, all of it. He had it sent from the Spring Court and dumped on the doorstep.
Bastard. Still a bastard, despite what he'd done for Rhys and me during that last battle. But the blame for that behavior was not on Tamlin's shoulders alone. I had created that rift, ripped it apart with my own 2 hands. I didn't quite feel guilty enough to warrant apologizing for it. Not yet. Possibly not ever.
Why?
Was the only question I could think to ask.
Perhaps it had something to do with your mate's visit the other day.
My spine stiffened, Rhys didn't involve you in that.
He might as well have. Whatever he said or did, Tamlin decided he wishes to remain in solitude.
His russet eye darkened.
Your mate should have known better than to kick a downed male.
I can't say I'm particularly sorry that he did.
You will need Tamlin as an ally before the dust has settled. Tread carefully.
I didn't want to think about it. Consider it today, any day. My business with him is done.
Yours might be, but Rhys's isn't. And you'd do well to remind your mate of that fact.
A pulse down the bond as if an answer. Everything all right? I let Rhys see and hear all that had been said, the conversation conveyed in the blink of an eye.
I'm sorry to have caused him trouble, Rhys said. Do you need me to come home?
I'll handle it.
Let me know if you need anything,
Rhys said, and the bond went silent.
Checking in?
Lucian asked quietly. I don't know what you're talking about, I said, my face the portrait of boredom. He gave me a knowing look, continuing to the door and grabbing his heavy overcoat and scarf from the hooks mounted on the wood paneling beside it.
The bigger box is for you, the smaller one is for her.
It took me a heartbeat to realize he meant the presents. I glanced over my shoulder to the careful silver wrapping, the blue bows atop both boxes. When I looked back, Lucian was gone. I found my sister in the kitchen watching the kettle scream. He's not staying for tea, I said. No sign of Nuala or Caradwyn. Elaine simply removed the kettle from the heat. I knew I wasn't truly angry with her. Not angry with anyone but myself, but I said, You couldn't say a single word to him? A pleasant greeting. Elaine only stared at the steaming kettle as she set it on the stone counter. He brought you a present. Those doe brown eyes turned toward me, sharper than I'd ever seen them. And that entitles him to my time, my affections? No, I blinked. But he is a good male. Despite our harsh words, despite this band of exiles bullshit, he cares for you. He doesn't know me. You don't give him the chance to even try to do so. Her mouth tightened, the only sign of anger in her graceful countenance. I don't want a mate. I don't want a male. She wanted a human man. Solstice. Today was solstice, and everyone was supposed to be cheerful and happy. Certainly not fighting left and right. I know you don't. I loosed a long breath. But I had no idea how to finish that sentence. Just because Lucian was her mate didn't mean he had a claim on her time, her affection. She was her own person, capable of making her own choices, assessing her own needs. He's a good male, I repeated. And I fought for the words. I don't like to see either of you unhappy. Elaine stared at the work table. Baked goods, both finished and incomplete, arrayed on the surface, the kettle now cooling on the counter. I know you don't. There was nothing else to be said, so I touched her shoulder and strode out. Elaine didn't say a word. I found Moore sitting on the bottom steps of the stairs, wearing a pair of peach-colored loose pants and a heavy white sweater, a combination of Amryn's usual style and my own. Gold earrings flashing, Moore offered a grim smile. Drink? A decanter and a pair of glasses appeared in her hands. Mother above, yes. She waited until I sat beside her on the oak steps and downed a mouthful of amber liquid, the stuff burning its way along my throat and warming my belly, before she asked, Do you want my advice? No. Yes. I nodded. Moore drank deeply from her glass. Stay out of it. She's not ready, and neither is he. No matter how many presents he brings. I lifted a brow. Snoop. Moore leaned back against the steps, utterly unrepentant. Let him live with his band of exiles. Let him deal with Tamlin in his own way. Let him figure out where he wants to be, who he wants to be.
The same goes with her.
She was right. I know you still blame yourself for your sister's being made. Moore nudged my knee with her own.
And because of that, you want to fix everything for them now that they're here.
I always wanted to do that, I said glumly. Moore smiled crookedly.
That's why we love you. Why they love you.
Nesta, I wasn't so sure about.
Moore continued, just be patient. It'll sort itself out. It always does.
Another kernel of truth. I refilled my glass, set the crystal decanter on the step behind us, and drank again.
I want them to be happy, all of them. They will be.
She said the simple words with such unflagging conviction that I believed her. I arched a brow.
And you? Are you happy?
Moore knew what I meant, but she just smiled, swirling the liquor in her glass.
It's solstice. I'm with my family. I'm drinking. I'm very happy.
A skilled evasion, but one I was content to partake in. I clinked my heavy glass against hers.
Speaking of our family, where the hell are they?
Moore's brown eyes lit up.
Oh, he didn't tell you, did he?
My smile faltered.
Tell me what? What the three of them do every solstice morning.
I'm beginning to be nervous.
Moore set down her glass and gripped my arm. Come with me.
Before I could object, she winnowed us out. Blinding light hit me, and cold. Brisk, brutal cold. Far too cold for the sweaters and pants we wore. Snow, and sun, and wind, and mountains, and a cabin.
The cabin.
Moore pointed to the endless field atop the mountain, covered in snow, just as I'd last seen it. But rather than a flat, uninterrupted expanse,
are those snow forts?
A nod. Something white shot across the field, white and hard and glistening, and then Cassian's yowl echoed off the mountains around us, followed by,
You bastard!
Reese's answering laugh was bright as the sun on snow. I surveyed the three walls of snow, the barricades, that bordered the field as Moore erected an invisible shield against the bitter wind. It did little to drive away the cold, though.
They're having a snowball fight.
Another nod.
Three Illyrian warriors, I said. The greatest Illyrian warriors are having a snowball fight.
Moore's eyes practically glowed with wicked delight.
Since they were children.
They're over 500 years old.
Do you want me to tell you the running tally of victories?
I gaped at her, then at the field beyond, at the snowballs that were indeed flying with brutal, swift precision as dark heads popped over the walls they'd built.
No magic, Moore recited. No wings, no breaks.
They've been out here since noon.
It was nearly three. My teeth began chattering. I've always stayed in to drink, Moore supplied, as if that were an answer.
How do they even decide who wins?
Whoever doesn't get frostbite?
I gaped at her again over my clacking teeth.
This is ridiculous. There's more alcohol in the cabin.
Indeed, none of the males seemed to even notice us. Not as Asriel popped up, launched two snowballs sky high, and vanished behind his wall of snow again. A moment later, Reese's vicious curse barked toward us.
Asshole!
Laughter laced every syllable. Moore looped her arm through mine again.
I don't think your mate is going to be the victor this year, my friend.
I leaned into her warmth, and we waded through the shin-high snow toward the cabin, the chimney already puffing against the clear blue sky. Illyrian babies, indeed.
Chapter 19. Feyre. Asriel won. His 199th victory, apparently. The three of them had entered the cabin an hour later, dripping snow, skin splotched with red, grinning from ear to ear. Moore and I snuggled together beneath a blanket on the couch, only rolled our eyes at them. Reese just dropped a kiss atop my head. declared the three of them were going to take a steam in the cedar-lined shed attached to the house, and then they were gone. I blinked at Moore as they vanished, letting the image settle.
"Another tradition," she told me,
the bottle of amber-colored alcohol mostly empty, and my head now spinning with it.
"An Illyrian custom, actually. The heated sheds, the birchin, a bunch of naked warriors sitting together in the steam, sweating."
I blinked again. Moore's lips twitched.
"About the only good custom the Illyrians ever came up with, to be honest."
I snorted.
"So the three of them are just in there. Naked. Sweating.
Mother above."
"Interested in taking a look?"
The dark purr echoed into my mind. "Ugh, go back to your sweating."
"There's room for one more in here."
"I thought mates were territorial."
I could feel him smile as if he were grinning against my neck.
"I'm always eager to learn what sparks your interest, Feyre darling."
I surveyed the cabin around me, the surfaces I'd painted nearly a year ago. "I was promised a wall, Rhys."
A pause, a long pause. "I've taken you against a wall before."
"These walls."
Another long, long pause. "It's bad form to be at attention while in the birchen."
My lips curved and I sent him an image, a memory, of me on the kitchen table just a few feet away, of him kneeling before me, my legs wrapped around his head.
"Cruel, wicked thing."
I heard a door slamming somewhere in the house, followed by a distinctly male yelp, then banging, as if someone was trying to get back inside. Moore's eyes sparkled.
"You got him kicked out, didn't you?"
My answering smile set her roaring. The sun was sinking toward the distant sea beyond Valaris, when Rhys stood at the black marble mantel of the townhouse sitting room and lifted his glass of wine. All of us, in our finery for once, lifted ours in suit. I'd opted to wear my Starfall gown, forgoing my crown but wearing the diamond cuffs at my wrists. It sparkled and gleamed in my line of vision as I stood at Rhys's side, taking in every plane of his beautiful face as he said,
"To the blessed darkness from which we are born, and to which we return."
Our glasses rose and we drank. I glanced to him, my mate, in his finest black jacket, the silver embroidery gleaming in the phaylight.
"That's it?"
He arched a brow.
"Did you want me to keep droning on, or did you want to start celebrating?"
My lips twitched. "You really do keep things casual."
"Even after all this time, you still don't believe me."
His hand slid behind me and pinched. I bit my lip to keep from laughing.
"I hope you got me a good solstice present."
It was my turn to pinch him, and Rhys laughed, kissing my temple once before sauntering out of the room to no doubt grab more wine. Beyond the windows, darkness had indeed fallen, the longest night of the year. I found Elaine studying it, beautiful in her amethyst-colored gown. I made to move toward her, but someone beat me to it. The Shadow Singer was clad in a black jacket and pants similar to Rhysand's, the fabric immaculately tailored and built to fit his wings. He still wore his siphons atop either hand, and shadow trailed his footsteps, curling like swirled embers. But there was little sign of the warrior otherwise, especially as he gently said to my sister,
"Happy solstice."
Elaine turned from the snow falling in the darkness beyond and smiled slightly.
"I've never participated in one of these."
Amran supplied from across the room, Varian at her side, resplendent in his princely regalia.
"They're highly overrated."
Moore smirked.
"Says the female who makes out like a bandit every year. I don't know how you don't get robbed going home with so much jewelry stuffed in your pockets."
Amran flashed her two white teeth.
"Careful, Moore, again, or I'll return the pretty little thing I got you."
Moore, to my surprise, shut right up, and so did the others, as Rhys returned with,
"You didn't,"
I blurted out the words. He grinned at me over the giant tiered cake in his arms, over the 21 sparkling candles lighting up his face. Cassian clapped me on the shoulder.
"You thought you could sneak it past us, didn't you?"
I groaned.
You're all insufferable.
Elaine floated to my side. Happy birthday, Feyre. My friends, my family, echoed the words as Rhys set the cake on the low-lying table before the fire. I glanced toward my sister. Did you? A nod from Elaine. Nuala did the decorating, though. It was then that I realized what the three different tiers had been painted to look like. On the top, flowers. In the middle, flames. And on the bottom, widest layer, stars. The same design of the chest of drawers I'd once painted in the dilapidated cottage. One for each of us, each sister. Those stars and moons sent to me, my mind, by my mate, long before we'd ever met. I asked Nuala to do it in that order, Elaine said as the others gathered around. Because you're the foundation, the one who lifts us. You always have been. My throat tightened unbearably, and I squeezed her hand in answer. More, Cauldron bless her, shouted, Make a wish, and let us get to the presents. At least one tradition did not change on either side of the wall. I met Rhys's stare over the sparkling candles. His smile was enough to make the tightness in my throat turn into burning in my eyes.
What are you going to wish for?
A simple, honest question. And looking at him, at that beautiful face and easy smile, so many of those shadows vanished. Our family gathered around us, eternity, a road ahead. I knew. I truly knew what I wanted to wish for, as if it were a piece of Amryn's puzzle clicking into place, as if the threads of the weaver's tapestry finally revealed the design they'd formed to make. I didn't tell him, though, not as I gathered my breath and blew. Cake before dinner was utterly acceptable on solstice, Rhys informed me, as we set aside our plates on whatever surface was nearest in the sitting room, especially before presents. What presents? I asked, surveying the room empty of them, save for Lucian's two boxes. The others grinned at me as Rhys snapped his fingers and... Oh. Boxes and bags, all brightly wrapped and adorned, filled the bay windows. Piles and mountains and towers of them. More let out a squeal of delight. I twisted toward the foyer. I'd left mine in a broom closet on the third level. Nope, there they were, wrapped and by the back of the bay. Rhys winked at me.
I took it upon myself to add your presence to the communal trove.
I lifted my brows. Everyone gave you their gifts? He's the only one who can be trusted not to snoop. Moore explained. I looked toward Asriel.
Even him, Amryn said.
Asriel gave me a guilty cringe.
Spymaster, remember?
We started doing it 2 centuries ago, Moore went on, after Rhys caught Amryn literally shaking a box to figure out what was inside. Amryn clicked her tongue as I laughed.
What they didn't see was Cassian down here 10 minutes earlier, sniffing... Each box.
Cassian threw her a lazy smile.
I wasn't the one who got caught.
I turned to Rhys. And somehow you're the most trustworthy one? Rhys looked outright offended.
I am High Lord, favorite darling. Unwavering honor is built into my bones.
Moore and I snorted. Amryn strode for the nearest pile of presents.
I'll go first.
Of course she will.
Varian muttered, earning a grin from me and Moore. Amryn smiled sweetly at him before bending to pick up a gift. Varian had the good sense to shudder, only when she'd turn her back on him. But she plucked up a pink-wrapped present, read the label, and ripped into it. Everyone tried and failed to hide their wince. I'd seen some animals tear into carcasses with less ferocity. But she beamed as she turned to Asriel, a set of exquisite pearl and diamond earrings dangling from her small hands.
Thank you, Shadow Singer, she said, inclining her head.
Asriel only inclined his head in return.
I'm glad they passed inspection.
Cassian elbowed his way past Amryn, earning a hiss of warning, and began chucking presents. Moore caught hers easily, shredding the paper with as much enthusiasm as Amryn. She grinned at the general.
Thank you, darling.
Cassian smirked.
I know what you like.
Moore held up. I choked. Asriel did, too, whirling on Cassian as he did. Cassian only winked at him as the barely there red negligee swayed between Moore's hands.